Welcome to the Queer Witch Project, your resource for all things queer and witchy. I am Damona Peacock, a fabulous, non-binary, neuro-spicy, ordained queerdo with a hyperfixation for everything symbolism, cycles, and patterns.
And I am Moon Kitty, a queer femme poly kitchen witch and a proud geek, and apparently have a strap that keeps slipping off my shoulder. But that's
Woo!
okay. Today's topic is walking a solitary path. So we've talked a lot about different ways and different cultures and how things work in different ways that are practices. And you and I both currently identify as being solitary. As a solitary witch, but we haven't necessarily always, or have we? So I
Well,
know, what is your experience, or what does solitary mean
I
to you?
like how now you have two straps that are.
I know they're flopping.
It's
For
cute.
those of you who are listening to this, you have no idea what I mean. For those of you who are watching this on YouTube,
They're being.
I have one particular or two particular straps that just keep sliding off my shoulders, and they're just going to go slowly for the entire episode.
It's the style.
Yes.
You're meant to do that. Yeah. What was my experience? Okay, well, I started out always a seeker, always asking questions. I can remember through childhood people not being able to answer my questions satisfactorily because, like, when you're a kid, people don't really want to be answering the question, who is God and who wrote the Bible? Like, they just don't give satisfactory answers. So when I was a young adult, really probably freshly 18, in my year 18th year, I joined a pagan circle. And I was trained as a priestess under that tr their traditions. I was I dedicated to this myself to the circle. And went through their program and whatever. And then it came time to I came very close to initiating, and there was a lot of drama that had occurred throughout the time that I was involved, that just kept amping up and getting worse. And now looking back, I didn't have words for it then, but it was very trauma triggering for me. But it's because there was some very culty aspects to this group where, like, if somebody had left the circle, you really kind of were socially pressured to not be friends with them anymore. And I didn't really, my brain didn't understand that because I'm just like, whether they're involved in my church or not, they're still a friend. And I'm friends with people outside of the circle. So why can't I still be friends with someone who left the circle? But that's an aspect of control that I would never, let's just put it this way, I'll never give that up to anybody else ever again to control anybody. Yeah. I get to control who's in, who I am and am not, are not friends with. So there's some culty stuff. And then the other thing that, like, I vividly remember that rubbed me the wrong way is that they were trying to push me into initiating and I wasn't ready. And there was a book list that I was supposed to read. And they were basically going to be like, well, since it's taking you so long to get through the book list, we could just, like, not require that of you and initiate you anyway. And you can still, like, read the books, even after you're initiated. And again, I didn't have words for it back then, but, like, my ADHD brain doesn't learn very well through boring pagan textbooks. I'm very much like a. I like attending lectures. I like audio learning. So why I love TikToks so much. But I just was feeling pressure to initiate into this circle that was already showing me red flags and problematicness. And I'm really young and I'm not understanding it, but it's triggering the traumas in me. And so instantly my inner rebel archetype resists being forced into initiation. And looking back, I'm really glad. I think that was for self-preservation. So, but I learned a lot. I did learn a lot. I was trained, and then I also promptly was so traumatized from that experience that I decided paganism, I was done with it. I was also done with spirituality in general, because you get kind of jaded and fed up with stuff. And it really wasn't until I was dragged to my very first Pantheacon convention back in the day, that I re-engaged in that part of myself. But from that point on, though I engaged in community a lot, I identified as a solitary witch. And I just wanted to do it my way. I wanted to learn from a lot of different sources, constantly a seeker. Like, I guess it could be like the Mercury and Gemini thing, but like I'm always wanting to figure out the commonalities between a bunch of different beliefs or a bunch of different people's answers to things, and then kind of form my own viewpoint based off of the data points that I'm able to collect. And I felt like identifying as a solitary, which is giving me permission and access to my own spirituality. How I tuned into me. Like, I don't believe that any other person should be telling me what's right and wrong for me, or be the go between myself and my higher power and my spiritual guides. Or, I think that's where religions kind of come in and get a little shady. So yeah, I did not start off solitary, but I ended up solitary as a path of empowerment,
I love it.
and just sticking true to myself, because there were things that, even though I learned a lot, there were things that I was taught that I questioned a lot, and formed different opinions of, which would not have been accepted
If you were in a formal.
if I had initiated into that circle. I would have had to fight that a lot, because yeah, you had to do it the right way. It was also a very heteronormative circle. We had two gay men join the circle, and they were basically told that they would have to find female friends to be their priestesses, because they weren't allowed as a gay couple to run, because you had to have a priestess running the circle, and the priestess had to have a priest holding space for her. And so one of the things that happened when I did join that circle is they paired me up with someone. They match made me with someone. And that was my first real adult relationship that did real adult things. And you know what? That was like a on and off again 3-year relationship that was terribly abusive. But I was pressured into it with my but through my spiritual community. So you can see why maybe I am a little side eye to groups in general. And that's not to say that there are amazing groups out there. It's just not my thing.
And that's totally, that makes total sense. Appreciate that.
Except I want to learn from them as much as they're willing to teach me without being initiated into them. But yeah.
No, I hear that. For me, it was a very different path. Because again, I've mentioned this before. I grew up very Catholic, went to church every Sunday. I taught CCD through high school, which is continuing Catholic development for those who don't know. So I taught the younger elementary school kids on Sunday mornings who before Mass and then after Mass and had youth groups and that kind of stuff. So I did all of that through high school. And then in high school, I was blessed in the sense that my mom always told me, I don't mind, and I actually encourage you to go out and go to your friends' churches because maybe there's something that's better for you. Now, did she ever expect me to go pagan? No, but I do appreciate the fact that she tried to encourage me to find my own path, and I think that ultimately is what stuck with me. But at the same time, I graduated from high school. I was young, impressionable. I had a boyfriend, and that I'd already been with since I was like 14 at that point, and get out of high school, and we'd been together for 3 or 4 years at that, and it was like, okay, well, I can't really. I've always loved the idea of joining a circle, a pagan circle, but he was also Catholic, and I couldn't join a witch circle when I had a boyfriend, and that boyfriend turned into a husband, and we were married in the Catholic Church, so I couldn't find a witch circle. And in fact, when I did ultimately come out to him and say, hey, I'd like to kind of like start exploring this path because I had been introduced to it, hidden it, but introduced to it earlier. And his response was, well, why the hell do we get married in the Catholic Church then if this is what you're going to go down? So that just, it shut me up, shut me down. And I just went underground. So back to, I said, I got my first witchy book at 17. 17 or 18, from a friend, a mutual friend of ours that became a whole nother complicated relationship and then some, but that's a different story. But I'd always been curious. Again, as pagans, there's something about if you're queer and pagan, you will have, we've mentioned this in some other episodes before, you will have a pantheon phase at some point in time. You're going to be attracted to some sort of mythological pantheon, and you wonder why it can't happen now, not realizing it can. But
And you
anyway,
worship
so
them still.
I was very attracted to the idea of earth magic and elements and elemental magic, because even as a kid, I love fantasy novels and magic and witchcraft and spell work and fire, earth, water, air, earth. All of that was really, really cool. So I was really into the idea of it and wanted it to be real. And anyway, so I got my first spell book and magic book on magic, but I had to hide them. And they were hidden under my bed, under my mattress, tucked away in a box. And then after I got married, same thing, it just stayed hidden away. Now it kind of grew over time to crystals and other some implements. But for the most part, it didn't come out except in ways that were socially acceptable being Catholic, i.e. candles. I had so many candles, not just as a Sagittarian fire magic person,
Yeah,
but
sure.
Catholicism also, if you're familiar, you have a lot of saint candles, you have a lot of candle work. So that candle magic and that spell work became my first introduction, and crystals and stones became the second. So I started out always on a solitary path. I have not done anything but learn from a solitary way. And then I was married for almost 18 years. So I never got everything I learned was through that solitary path. I never really joined anything. And then when that marriage ended and I moved on to a different phase in my life, came out about a whole bunch of things and said, I'm not going to be pushed back into this broom closet. I'm going to be who I am. I had already walked the solitary path for so long and learned my own ways of doing things that I don't think I could have joined a circle. And in fact, even when I was thinking about doing something, there were a couple of different magical traditions that I had seen at Pantheacon and others. I'm going, ooh, that might be interesting. Literally, every time I tried thinking about something being interested, something would shift and I wouldn't be able to go down that path. So it's like life has literally said, every time I tried to go towards something, it goes, no, you're going this way. But like you said, I am constantly learning. I identify as Alice in Alice in Wonderland so hard that I have a tattoo on my back about
Down the rabbit
the
hole.
Jabberwocky. Down the rabbit hole, curiouser and curiouser, always. I want to know, I want to explore, I want to feel, I want to be a part of that. And magic has been that path with it. Now, that doesn't mean that I haven't worked with others, because I've done a lot of rituals with you. And I've co-taught classes, I've all that kind of stuff. We've done it
I've done
together.
like a goddess group for where we made a commitment for 13 months. So a year and a month. So I like that closed, not open-ended, like you must initiate into our practice and teach it and be our priestess forever, cult-like vibes. But I love the idea of like, oh, I will come together with this particular group of people for this particular set amount of time, and we will have amazing magical experiences, but we don't own each other. We don't, you know, we don't, we can share wisdoms and traditions, but like, I don't, and I'm sure there is a lot of spiritual in the spiritual world that I have not been able to access, I guess, because I haven't gone down the traditional routes of learning through any traditional religion and or path. But I don't regret that, and I don't feel like I am lacking in wisdom because of it. I feel like maybe mine has been earned or hard-earned or come upon in different ways, practical experience or attending the right classes or finding the right people. But like, again, I don't sit and learn the same way other people do, and I have a constant rebel in me that I myself am trying not to over, you know, I rebel against a lot of the idea of the way to Z is through A, B, C, D, blah, 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 blah. Because
Exactly.
I guess maybe I am also a little bit of a chaos goblin. I don't know.
That's okay.
But
No,
I'm
I.
not saying that people doing that is that they're wrong to do that, but I just know that there's like probably a little bit older than me or even my generation of pagans that find a lot of like value in that and a lot of identity in that. But then there's a huge amount of pagans that don't have that experience. And yeah, that's why we're talking about this stuff, because I think a lot of solitary witches feel left behind or lonely or excluded or undervalued, and we're here to say it's valid.
It's
It's so
completely
valid.
valid. And I just had a thought when you're talking about that as older generations. And again, makes me think of I am Gen X on the Xennial kind of cusp area, and I know you're a millennial. And
I am
I
an
think
older
that as
millennial.
that comes out with the idea of this generation was the original latchkey rebel generation, and it keeps kind of progressing from that. So looking at it from a generational perspective, it's not shocking that I did and want to do things my own way, and that got passed on from this point on, from that Gen X generation down. Each generation just takes doing it things their own way to a different to the next level, almost. So it really does make sense, in a lot of ways. But like you said, and you and I had a kind of an off conversation about this, just because you're walking the solitary path doesn't mean you're alone
No,
at
right. You
all
mean,
along that
yeah,
road.
very important to say that solitary doesn't mean you're doing it by yourself. That you don't have access to community, that you can't find community. You're not locked into a lot of it is kind of like I can do it my way, but I'm willing to learn from you and to help teach you and collaborate. And there are so many times where we do come together as community or as sisterhoods or as witchy folk, and we create something bigger than our solitary path. But I will always return to my solitary path. And I will seek out mentorships, or I will offer mentorships. There's nothing wrong with learning from other people, but they're not going to be my full access point to my spirituality. I am that access point.
And learning from other people, I know this is something that can be very a little bit challenging, especially if you are walking the solitary path, to look at making sure you're not being culturally appropriative in your practices. And that's where having someone who may be a mentor in a practice, if you are interested about that practice, having someone who's willing to help you and guide you through that is incredibly helpful, with again that knowledge that you're not going to take and try to profit off of that practice. So if you're going into that idea with wanting to profit off of it, like, oh, I'm gonna learn this and then I'm gonna write a book about this and sell, or I'm gonna learn this and do a tarot deck and sell lots of dollars and that kind of stuff. That's being culturally appropriative versus acknowledging and expanding your horizons to learn about how it all relates
Appreciative.
together. So there's a
And if
lot
you
of
want to be
difference in intent.
culturally appreciative, make sure you're going to the sources and you're supporting those communities if they're willing to teach you.
And if they're not
And
willing to teach you, let
respect
it
it.
go.
Yep. Some closed practices are closed practices for reasons.
Exactly.
Yay. PSA
Yay.
wisdoms. Yeah. So along the idea of the solitary path and the kind of skirting initiations here and there, like my rebel has done, I did still initiate. I came upon a reason to become legally ordained. Yes, I was asked to perform somebody's wedding, but before, I mean, I definitely agreed to do it, but before I actually went through with a legal ordination, I chose to take myself on a solitude mini vacay out in nature. This is a long story, but it was my process of self-initiating myself. Self-ordaining myself. And for me, what that meant was, and this is what I tell people, especially if they're asking me about how I became ordained, because they want to do a wedding. Sometimes it's like such a very mundane reason to do it. And I say, okay, let me warn you. You think you're just pushing a button on a computer website to get this legal ordination, but your spirit guides, your higher self, whatever you call your gods, it's going to see that as a commitment, as a invitation, And it will call you on it, and you will start finding that people start coming to you for things or confessing their life story to you. Or, and so I took that knowledge with me and I said, okay, I am doing this intentionally. I'm doing this purposefully, and I'm doing this for myself, to myself, because I'm not going to ask somebody else to do this for me. And it's great if you want to bring people along to be your witness. I did it myself, like by myself, because it was like, as growing up in abuse and toxicity and codependency, it was really empowering to do this as a sovereign spirit in a flesh body for myself. And I did some very intentional work to ordain spiritually, to initiate myself onto my own spiritual path, and to explain, what my, get in touch with my soul purpose and understand what it means, that what work in this world I'm willing to do as an ordained queerdo. And then I went and I did the illegal ordination afterwards. So I've also known a friend of mine who was for whose parents were preachers and Christian cult-like, of course, and they were forced to become baptized as a, I want to say, a young teen or adolescence.
Depends on the denomination. It can be from birth up to adulthood, so.
Right. Well, I knew that, let's just say that she was old enough to remember it, and it was in local to her, the river there, and it was her dad that performed the baptism, and she felt pressured into doing it and didn't want to. So way later in adulthood, they took themselves out to the same river at a different spot. I was blessed enough to be a witness and a support. It was not for me to do for them, but it was just, I came along and I did my own thing, and I was there to support them and witness them. And, of course, I was there for emergency if there wasn't, but just in case there would be, right? And we had one other friend. So we were just like the emotional support for this. But they went out and they rebaptized themselves under their own spirituality and their own traditions. Again, kind of like what I did, and taking it back, taking it for yourself, letting it be your path, your way, your rebaptism. So that, those are two examples that I would use as to how you can still have a very formalized spiritual practice while still being on a solitary path.
I love that. I love that those ideas. And I was baptized. I was baptized late because I do remember because all my brother, my sister, and I were all baptized at the same time. My sister was a baby and I was the oldest. So I was probably six, which is really shocking for being the Catholic Church and everything else. But there was again a whole other bit of a family history. My mom was a single mom. My father was a suicide, so that was going against the Catholic Church. There's a lot of things that were going against that. So I wasn't baptized as a baby. But it I've never thought about trying to reordain into my faith structure or faith system. And I don't know if I need to. And that's again my own kind of choice because it's not, even when I was doing it, I Well, the ritual and the aspects of it that I learned are still ingrained in me. I still love the ritual of if I'm going to of setting out places and things being in each place, calling the corners, doing that kind of practice. So I love that ritual that's still part of me, and that's ingrained from my history with the Catholic Church. But
But could it also have been that, like, something ancient within your soul was awakened by the rituals of the Catholic Church that you were exposed to as a child? Yeah. And now you shed the skin of the Catholic Church or the cult. We can debate. I just like to say that. But but you still practice your own rituals.
And that's exactly what it is. And it was funny because at much later in life, I'm going through the divorce. My grandmother, bless her heart, call her the plain colors nun. At many points, like they're rededicating the cathedral. You walk through this archway, and all of your past sins will be clean, swept clean, and you can come back into your faith with no issues, and you can take communion again. It's like, no, No, I
Thanks,
have
Mom.
no desire. And like, I
Yeah.
actively avoided the cathedral
Yeah.
downtown for a while because of that. It was just, so I had that feeling of like, no, I really don't. I know who I am. And it's just maybe it was that slow progression over time. But when I, and maybe that was just it, when I stepped out of hiding, when I stepped into my authenticity, when I went to Pantheacon for that first time, when I said, no, this is not something I want to go back. I've grown too much. I don't want to continue this marriage. I want to separate and I want to finish this. Maybe that was in its own way my own baptism.
Yeah.
And I just didn't kind
Or
of
your own
perceived it at that
initiation.
initiation, into something else. It's like, no, I'm not, that past is gone. That is part of my past and it
Yeah.
is gone. I don't need that. I don't need that aspect of it going forward. That part is holding me back and I refuse to let it go. So I guess I shed, which is, rather than being purified, I guess if that makes any kind of sense.
It does actually. I mean, an Ouroboros, the snake symbolism. I like the idea of the shedding. You know, I very much, as a peacock, I always say the peacock and the phoenix are one and the same, but one is a fantasy and one is the reality. Just like dinosaurs and dragons to me are the same. One's the, you know, what we think of as the, you know, reality, but we don't, they could have had feathers.
Also, they found a skeleton of a dinosaur that looks like the Chinese dragon, which is where that came from. I just saw this like the other day, and I'm like going, yes, it has, it's this whole shape, everything else of the Chinese dragon,
Wow,
of
very
where
cool.
that kind of idea of dragon came from in the Chinese mythology. And yeah, those actual fossils they found that support
Yeah.
that feel. So yes, dinosaurs were dragons. And it's sorry, that was me going
Yep.
off on a very nerdy tangent,
I love it.
but that's it's like we mentioned in a previous episodes, magic is science that we haven't understood yet. And there we go. We have proof of dragons in a different kind of form and fossilized records. But anyway, back to
So, what are some of the resources that we used to get us started on our solitary path? For like, if you were to guide a baby pagan, what would you say? Like, this is what worked for me. This may, you know, we might tell them something different because there's, but what worked for us?
Right. And again, going back to a lot of my choices are out of print because they were books that were written in the 80s and 90s, that are not modern styles. But my first book, the book that my friend gave me that set me along this entire path, I will never forget it. It's called Good Magic by Marina Medici. And it was very soothing reading it. It was talked a lot about meditation and self practices and crystals. Mostly that's where I got most of my affinity for crystal magic came out of that book. And then I stumbled on another book called Practical Magic for the Solitary Witch
Nice.
by Nancy B. Watson. And that one really elevated my magical practice. And it got me in touch with meeting my elementals. And those kind of elemental spirit guardians,
Yeah,
kind
yeah.
that I've in there. And I can still, even since that day, I've had the connection. I don't always call on them, but I can see them if I think about them. They all came to me on its own kind of spirit journey, introduced themselves. They have names, they have very defined shapes. One gave me an orgasm once, which is a whole nother different story. But it's very interesting. On that. So I learned again, those are the two that were the first books that made the I significant impact. And there have been several others that I've read on kitchen
Yeah.
witchery and all the basics of various witchcraft. And I think it was the Star Wolf or something else that were very popular and a bunch of others that I've read. But those are the two that just,
Maybe
those will always
Starhawk.
be my base. And A Century of Spells was the other one. They gave me Practical Magic, or they gave me Good Magic and A Century of Spells. So I'll have a lot of really old traditional spell crafting
Nice.
things. So those are mine. What about yours?
The very first book that, so first I had someone explain to me what magic was in the pagan world, and they used a lot of like kind of quantum physics type explanation, which really intrigued me. And so they're like, okay, well, if you want to learn more, Read the book True Magic, spelled with a K, MICI, MICKEY, no, MAGICK. So True Magic, A Beginner's Guide by Amber K. And that was my very first book. And again, I find reading text type books trudging and they put me to sleep. But this one was very much like a conversational and easy to read. And it made so much sense to me that was like, oh, I never thought about it that way. But of course, yes, that makes so much sense. And it's been decades since I read that book. And maybe I should reread it and be like and refresh myself, because I honestly can't tell you what all made so much sense, but just it,
But it
I just
did.
page after page, oh my God, yes, it's like something awakening inside of me that made so much sense. And also I'll always remember that book. And I also got to meet that author who
Awesome.
also is queer. Yeah. Oh, I wonder if he,
Nice. That's
yeah.
awesome. I mean, seriously, I'm like going, can I find this book?
Because I'm pretty sure that there was the lesbian stuff happening at their, so I got to meet them at Pantheon. And the funniest part is, like, here's me. I'm so terrible at knowing big name pagans that I'll be riding in the elevator with them, and then I won't know who they are, and I'll have a conversation with them, and then we part ways. And then my friend's like, "Did you know that that was Amber K?" "I did not know that. I only know the name. I don't know the face, but now I do." Yeah, so there we've had fun moments like that. But so that was my first real book introduction, which is it's really big for me to recommend a book. But again, like you said, there have been various other books that have spoken to me on a spiritual level. Sometimes they're like more self-helpy or more ambiguous or not necessarily directly pagan. Like, for example, I remember A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. Yes, it's like an Oprah book, and I don't know now if I would recommend it. I would have to go back and read it and decide. But what that book did for me, though, is helped me understand what the ego is, and it helps the ego not be so.
Egotistical.
It taught me a lot. Yeah, it taught me a lot about the psyche and how the brain works and how you don't make the ego your enemy, but you also don't want it driving all the time, and how important the brain thinks it is. And also like the importance of humility. And yeah, so there was a lot. And then there was another one that there's like this poet that really got me. And I've read several books of his. But the one that I started with was The Book of Awakening, because it was literally there had an entry for every day of the year, and you could just you don't have to read it cover to cover. But I did spend the first year reading it once a day, and now I still have it, and every once in a while I'll just go pull up the day, and I'll just look at what day it is. I'll go search for that day in the book, and I'll go read it, and it's really just a short entry. But it's always so profound or poetic, or there's some kind of story that's like very spiritually. And for some reason, it magically just works that it really fits in my life because it's what I needed to hear at the moment. And at the end, there's some bullet points that are like suggested meditations. So that book was like really amazing to me. And it's called The Book of Awakening by Mark Nepo. And then his second book, not se his second book, the second book of his that I read was called Finding Inner Courage. But my friends and I called it Finding Inner Orange because there's literal like fruit oranges on the cover. So we just Finding Inner Orange book. But learning about like the word courage and how it even became a word and what it really means. And it did so much for me to reframe all the fear and anxiety that I experience in daily life and just learn what it's like to operate through courage. And it was just life-changing. So I don't know. Sometimes I just tumbled into random books that spoke to me on such a soul level that was like really opened up my mind to consider things or to be even to be able to just offer wisdom. Hey, I learned this and it made me think this, and it's really helped me reframe my thoughts and how I approach the world, and then other people will be like, "Oh wow, you're so wise." And I'm like, read a few books.
One or two.
Yeah, it just made sense to me on some level. So anytime I come upon, whether it's a TikTok or a book or a YouTube or a podcast, and it starts to like tinkle that part in my brain where it's like, wow, I never thought of it that way, but it makes so much sense. Like, of course, I will climb onto, glom onto those.
I love it.
Yeah.
So we've got books, and I know there, again, if you have a specialized thing that you're interested in, there are so many books on so many different topics for deepening your knowledge base. Again, I would just be very conscious if you are going down a culturally sensitive
Yes.
road, hoodoo, voodoo, Brujeria, be very conscious of what's closed and open and your intent for wanting to know. Because
And who actually offered the
that's it,
books?
affecting your inner colonizer yourself. Why do you want to know this information? What are you intending to do with it? And seeing if you can find a practitioner who could, if you truly have an honorable intent, working with them on it. But there are other things like spellcrafting, sigil making, crystal magic, all of those things that are open to everyone. There's so many different books. Kitchen witchery. There's so many kitchen witchery books out there.
My very first numerology book was The Idiot's Guide to Numerology.
I love it.
I'm not sad about
No.
it. It worked.
It worked, and sometimes those idiot guides, I know they're a really popular thing for a time frame,
They
but they're
were.
popular for a reason because they
Yeah.
break down really difficult, complex concepts into bite-sized chunks.
Which my brain loves bite-sized chunks.
Exactly. There's a book that I got on Lenormand cartomancy, which I've loved the idea of it, but it's so, even just looking at it, I've had like 10 pages in and it's so complicated. I'm looking, I don't think I'll finish this. It's
Yeah, I've been
just,
there. I've been there with
too much.
numerology books. Like, I'm like, oh, I can't math that hard. Okay. I'm happy with my level of knowledge in numerology, and I'll come back to you.
Exactly. I'll
But,
use you as a reference if I need to look something up specifically, but you don't become my go-to for
yeah.
things.
But you mentioned something that I was going to say, beyond books. Books doesn't have to be the only thing that really starts people out, because
No.
getting started, like if you're feeling called to pick up a deck, or if you're gifted a tarot deck, or want to learn some more hands-on, type of things, a tarot deck or an oracle deck will start opening doorways into your spiritual brain analyses abilities, and lead you further into your path and further into what's best for you to be contemplating right now, and read the energy that's around you right now, and just kind of making you more aware. And more tuned in and moving forward with more intent. That's one of the reasons I'm so drawn to like tarot work. So that's a whole other resource that I would recommend if that's something that interests someone, which obviously is something we both,
Yes, we both love tarot.
yeah, love.
And it's funny that you say that because you've heard a little bit about my history with tarot is when I got my first tarot deck, I still believe in the nonsense that you can't buy one. You have to be gifted. So I didn't think it would work. And because I didn't think it would work, and because I was closeted and hiding myself, it wasn't working. So it was like, eh, whatever. But I found and stumbled into I Ching, which is a open, it's hard to define whether it's an open or a closed practice at this point in time. This was way back early in the 90s. So again, at the time, there wasn't the idea of what is cultural appropriation. That wasn't a phrase or a terminology that was there. But I've since gone and I've recently was at Burning Man in 2023, and down my street, there was a camp that was I Ching, and they were opening it up, and they literally gave everyone the traditional. They gave a book on the changes. It's the Book of
Wow.
Changes. They gave a book out to everyone. They gave the coins for how to do it the traditional way, and everything
Wow.
else. So it was that kind of reminder that hey, this is a practice that is actually open. It's a rather esoteric practice. It's not a common practice of divination in the Chinese Asian. That historically Asian population and culture, Tibetan, Chinese, mysticism there. So it's not a common practice, but it's also not a closed one, which was interesting. So I'm grateful for that because I stopped doing it for many years because I wasn't sure if it was closed or open. But there are that idea of symbolic language and symbolic changes and how life shifts and changes around it. There was something about that that drew me. As something that was outside of my normal practice, because being a white girl in the US, this is Eastern mythology and Eastern cultural
Esoteric.
practice. So it was like, is this there? Is this right? And I didn't want to fall into the trap of, well, it probably hit me in a past life, because that's a really easy cop out to say. Whether it's true or not, it's a very easy cop out. So once I recognized it, it was nice to have it come back and be reaffirmed back in my life on
Nice.
something. And I've done I Ching readings for you,
I
and they're
remember.
really fascinating. But again, the first one came out of a very simple, like a beginner's guide to I Ching, and it was just the right book that kind of kickstarted and made sense to me. So those beginner books, don't knock them in any way, shape, or form, because they
Anything that gets
are.
you thinking about this symbolic language or teaching you this can mean that, or this can open a doorway about this over here, and whether it's dream interpretation or I Ching or different oracles or runes, which I'm not expert in at all, but I'm reverent of.
Yeah, fascinated by.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
also the idea of the things that you may not be able to do before do come back around, because while I was doing I Ching at that point in time, I stopped. But as soon as I stopped doing that, tarot became a really big thing back in my life. And that's where it's been primarily a focus. So just because something doesn't work for you at one point in time doesn't mean you won't be called to it later. And that's where these books, the decks, the different sources of knowledge, the internet, hell, even TikTok can really give you great perceptions and great resources for how to learn about something that you may not have ac had access to before.
I love that you say that because I always see the interwebs as like the domain of Mercury, or different gods that Thoth,
Communication.
scribes, the
Yes.
communicators, the messengers of God, even though, like, to be fair, it has its shadow aspect where people are awful and do awful things and all that, but it has also this, it is holding oral traditions for us, it is allowing our world to be smaller so we do know what's going on in different places, and we're learning from other cultures and learning to be more open and accepting, and realizing there's wisdom to be gained from all over. We can connect through social media platforms and build communities and teach people and learn. And yeah, so I just kind of feel like, in a way, it is kind of, a blessed tool of the collective consciousness. And I always just, for some reason, think Hermes is out here ruling over it. And as I'm scrolling, and then, like, damn you, the algorithms, and then some poem pops up and it like gets me in my heart space because it's exactly what I'm bitching about to my friends and chat, because, like, that's how algorithms work. But I go, oh, look, it's the internet prophets being very obvious again. I needed to hear this. I needed to see this. I needed to think about this. I needed this meme. Also, the internet culture never lets me down. No matter how dark the world gets, there will be a meme about it, and it will be both too soon and completely funny. Yeah, there have been times where I don't know if I could make it without being able to laugh at what the internet comes up with.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
So
especially when, like, in the political spheres when things are getting really dark, but then the internet's just like,
Yes.
ba-da-ba-da.
Yes, graveyard.
So that's a
Graveyard humor is a
very
thing.
amazing tool that we now have access to. And look at us, we're a part of it.
Exactly. Yeah. This resource, this ability to do this. I was thinking earlier, I remember growing up when the idea of a video call was so futuristic. It's
You
like, oh my God,
mean
you could,
on the Jetsons?
yeah, like on the Jetsons, like this picture thing where like, oh my God, you can talk in like video format. And now here we are, not even thinking twice, doing this on a regular basis, and using this as a tool to then be able to put out form information in a different kind of format. And yes, there is misinformation out there, just
And you
as much
have to
as there
use
is
your
natural.
discernment.
You have to use your discernment, and also you can also use it as a learning experience, because if five different people tell you how to do something, maybe one way is the way that resonates with you.
Go learn about magical ethics and don't fall prey to people who are running scams, because,
Yes.
like, for example, tarot readers will never an ethical tarot reader is never going to be, hey, I just received a message for you. Can I send, can I give you a reading? They're not going to push their readings onto you, but we will make ourselves available for you to seek us out. But if you're not giving consent to a reading, whatever they're saying that they just picked up for you is it's either a scam or they're reading themselves.
Kind of rolling back around, commitment to personal spirituality. So whether you're walking the path of an organized group or whether you're walking it alone, this comes with what you're saying, this idea of responsibility to yourself
Yes.
and your guides to acknowledge and work with those unknown energies. As a witch, if you identify as a witch or as a spiritual practitioner who deals with magic, you're going to have to recognize that you are working with magic and what that involves, the energies, the manipulation of energies, the mind, the presentation, the focus, the meditation, all of that
The
is,
receptivity, the,
yes, that you are working with
effort.
it and acknowledge the power that it is.
Within you too, and you're connecting that to you within you. You're taking your own power back. You're using your power for your own good, for your highest good, and maybe hopefully even for the good of all, for the highest good of the community, and maybe the benefit of all humanity and or just the earth or the universe or however you want to frame it. But I feel that the solitary witch is a path to self-empowerment, is a path of self-empowerment, not to, it's not a destination, it's the journey. I think that that's why it kind of stands alone as far as, like, you're not going into a church or a religion and you're not going through some kind of hierophant or, high priest that is telling you how to, what your gods are saying to you. You're cutting out the middle man and you're going to your gods yourself.
In some ways, you become the Hierophant. You're not learning from the Hierophant, you become the Hierophant as you're learning.
That's annoying to me.
I
Just because it is so right on. Yes.
that knowing your personal experience of the
Yeah,
Hierophant
exactly.
card and everything else. It just that literally that came into my head as a moment and a moment ago, and it's like, okay, this message needs to come out right now.
I love you.
I love
You're
you.
gonna make me cry with how funny that was.
So there's so many different ways to learn and practice magic and to
Yes.
open up and connect when you're walking that solitary path. And whether you believe in the Wiccan rule of three, or whether you believe in something else, or good magic, baneful magic, neutral magic, all of those kinds of things, it is the self-responsibility and the self-acknowledgement of what you're doing and how that relates and shifts to the greater whole that you do need to be aware of and conscious of. What are
Yes.
you putting out and what are you doing?
It is not a lonely path, because in connecting to your own spirituality, you come into the knowledge that you are a spoke in a giant wheel. You are a cell in a giant body of humanity. You are a part of a bigger picture. You are one with the whole, but you are not all of what is. You're just a part of it. And that means that we have to make space and make room for the community, the aspects of, and not to say that we're supposed to lose our identity or individuality in the process. It's that balance of maintaining our uniqueness, our individuality, our independence, but also being able to serve a higher purpose to make being human on this earth in this day and age somehow easier for everybody. Yeah, it's not a disconnected path at all.
No, it's solitary, but it's connect. It's yeah, solitary but connected
I like that.
when you're working
Yeah.
it.
Spirit will send you your people. one way or another,
Exactly.
because you made that commitment. Other opportunities that kind of opened up for us, or for different that will open up for different people when you take that step to, or to self-ordinate or self-baptize, or just to work on some kind of hyperfixate on a spiritual path or a spiritual tool in the tool chest, you'll have people coming to you for readings
Yes.
or just opening up to you randomly because you seem very trustworthy, and all of a sudden you realize that you're sitting here taking their confessions.
Or you'll start a podcast.
Or you'll start a podcast. Blessed Hermes Mercury pushing that podcasty vibes. Right. We teach classes. We've arranged group rituals. So despite the fact that we identify as solitary witches, there are things that we have done that's on our resumes. There are
Yeah.
things that we will do that we continue to do, that is very much a part of the collective.
That commitment to ourselves and to our connection.
Yeah. So I think that about wraps it up, don't you?
I think so. I think we are good.
Yeah, so I would just say thank you to our listeners for joining us on this solitary path today. Thanks for listening to the Queer Witch Project. And if you're feeling the vibes of this, give us a like, give us some 5-star ratings, find us on YouTube, leave us some comments. We like to hear from you.
We truly do. And if there is a topic you want to know more about or an episode you would like to suggest, please contact us at thequeerwitchproject@gmail.com or find us on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram with the handle @queerwitchproject. We upload every other week. And remember, queerness is a key to magic.
Be yourself and love rebelliously. Bye.
Bye.
Legal ordinations. I wanted to, if anybody wanted to know how to go about that, did you also go through one?
Yes, I did
Okay.
actually.
So I thought we
Yeah,
should
I'm
talk
also
about
legally
how,
ordained.
yeah. So I figured we could just share that because, hey, I'm going to give you the tools I had. So I personally went through what was called the Universal Life Church. You sign up their website, you get legally ordained, you can purchase some credentials, and other memorabilia or whatever, but you don't have to. And if you are looking to become ordained to perform certain ceremonies, go ahead and make sure that you're looking up, again, like we would say, do your research about native plants. Look up the laws in your state or your country and find out what is legally bare minimum that you need. Because for where I am in California, it is just an or it worked. An online ordination was considered a legal ordination, and I was able to officiate. I am able to officiate weddings in that through that, but it could be different for different states or different countries. So you just got to do your research.
Do your
But for
research.
mine, it was Universal Life Church.
And for me, I went through an organization called American Marriage Ministries. So same kind of thing. It's a website, it's a oath kind of pledge thing, and it's again about, I can't remember what it was, but I have not personally had the opportunity to do weddings or anything else yet. I know when that time will come. I wanted to because I felt like I needed to, again, as part of my coming out and being able to step into it, it was something that felt the right thing to do to be able to offer this as a service. So if it comes out that's the right thing, I know it'll come to me. I think for you especially, you have a different energy, so I can absolutely see why people gravitate towards you as like, yes, I want you for that. Whereas I am a very different kind of energy, and there will be some point in time, I have no doubt, where I will officiate a ceremony of some sort, whether that's a hand fasting or whether that's a an actual marriage. But it was also important to me, if anything, to have that ability so when the time comes, it's there. So right now it's a tool in my back pocket that I haven't used yet, but when I need it, it is there.
Nice. And in a way, again,